Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to listen to this brand new episode of the Money Tree Podcast. I am your host, Nick Kraakman, founder of ValueSpreadsheet.com. And today's guest is a highly experienced day trader who has been a full-time trader for over 15 years and even codes his own technical indicators on the powerful TradingView platform. Please welcome my friend Chris Moody. Thanks so much for being here, Chris. I'm very excited to hear your viewpoints since our approaches to playing on the market are so radically different, you being a technical trader and me being a long-term value guy. So welcome to the show.
Well, Nick, it's an honor to be here, and we've known each other so long now, I feel like I need to give you an introduction. And Nick Kraakman, our host here, has finally gone out into educating all the knowledge that he has. And his first venture, I think he had over 900 people sign up for his webinar. So it's just an honor to be interviewed by you, Nick.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris. You're too kind. So let's get to the core of this interview, because I think the listeners are also very interested in your thoughts. So first of all, what does it mean to be a day trader, and how is it sort of different from being a long-term investor?
Well, the number one, I'm not just a day trader. Okay. I do day trade, but the big money is made in the longer moves.
Okay.
Or the larger moves. And so that's relative to, different people. Some people are investing, for months to years, to holding stocks for a lifetime, being that they're picking the right ones that last long term.
Absolutely.
And so I started out trading, I guess, what most people would classify as a swing type trader. And that could be in a position anywhere from several days to several weeks to several months.
Ah, okay. Okay.
I have gone through periods where I've day traded exclusively, and I really enjoy that. But the simple fact is, day trading, for whatever reason, is exciting to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And it is. It's you every day you can set a goal. You can accomplish that goal. Some days you're not. Mm-hmm. But you feel like you're doing something at the end of the day. You feel like you've worked, right?
Yeah.
And so, I've had an incredible experience day trading, but there's a phenomenal book for anyone that's not a value investor that wants to trade. And it's probably one of the best books ever written. And when you talk to true professionals, every one of them reads this book year after year. And it is Reminiscences, I hope I'm pronouncing that right,
of
a Stock Operator by Jesse Livermore. And it was in the early 1900s. My dates might be off a little bit there.
Okay.
But you get a lot of things from that book. First off, he's probably one of the most skilled traders within our lifetime. We weren't born then, but in the foreseeable past. If that makes sense. And in the early 1900s, he turned nothing, and he started out. They used to have what they call bucket shops, and this was back in the day where they had this tell us something, and they got the quotes from the exchanges, and then there was guys kind of like an old school baseball stadium where people manually put up the scores, where he would sit there and put up the stock prices, manually, mm-hmm. As they changed. And first off, the guy was a genius. He had a photographic memory. But I mean, we're talking from an age of 14, 15, 16. It got to the point where he was doing that, and he was always calculating the changes in price in his head. And he started noticing patterns.
Wow. And that was before the internet. This is way before the internet.
And I think at about 16, somebody came to him and said, and what he would do is he wasn't trying to trade or make money. He was just fascinated by it.
Yeah.
And he would, at the end of the day, he would keep this journal of what happened during the day and what he thought was going to happen with that stock price. And he got to the point where he was consistently right, close to 100% of the time. I mean, this guy was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And a friend of his came up and said, hey, you know, I don't remember the dollar amount, but, you know, hey, I've got $20, you know, let's go in and put it on this, on one of your plays. And they did that. And he became so wealthy that he was banned from, and this is, this, now think about this. He was banned from all bucket shops in the whole country.
Wow.
And this is before the internet, obviously, where people had pictures and knew what he looked like.
Yeah.
But it got to the point where he would travel, you know, states and states away and show up, and they, he would be kicked out as soon as he walked in the door. But he turned nothing into well over $100 million.
Wow.
In that period.
That's amazing. Yeah. And it's also very interesting that as value investors, we got this book of Benjamin Graham, The Intelligent Investor, which is sort of seen as the Bible. And for the trader side, you guys also have this book. And it's called Reminiscences of a Stock Operator. Okay. Interesting. Really cool. And is that also how you got started with trading, by reading that book, or did you get started in a different way?
No, I'm probably one of the luckiest people in the world, because I didn't know – I've been saying I've been trading full-time for 10, 12 years, and I've been saying that for a while. It's probably been 15 years now, but at that point in time, I didn't even know what the S&P 500 or the Dow was. I knew nothing about the market.
Sure.
I knew people made a lot of money in it, but my perception at the time was, well, yeah, those people work for Goldman Sachs on Wall Street. You know, they're Ivy League schools and they work for these major companies and, you know, they know what they're doing, right? But how am I going to get into that?
Sure. Yeah.
Per se. And maybe we'll do a follow-up interview, because it's a pretty fascinating story of the amount of incredible luck I've had with the top-of-the-line mentors. But I was referred to this guy, and I live in Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
Yeah.
And this is not known as the stock market mecca of the United States, okay? This is the Deep South, right? There's farming, there's mountains, there's people. There's a show right now of the people that live in the mountains and live off the land. I mean, this is North Carolina, okay? And I was referred to this guy that was teaching the stock market class by word-of-mouth advertising.
Okay, cool.
And so the first time I heard it, I was like, okay, yeah, whatever. And I'm not even going to say the city he lives in, because no one's ever heard of it. But he lives like in Chapel Hill. At least there's like a university here. He lives in a city that – or he lives in a town that no one's ever heard of, all right?
Yeah,
so
sure.
What does this guy know about the market? Well, a couple of days later, a friend that I highly respected – said that one of his employees was taking the class and doing really well. And that was actually the third time I'd heard about it. And we won't get into philosophical stuff, but it was like beating in my head that, hey, maybe I should go see what this guy's talking about. You know, it's funny that all, you know, within a week, three different people that don't even know each other told me about this guy.
Yeah.
So
it must be fate then, right?
Yeah. So I went to his course and, you know, was skeptical. I mean, I had seen a lot of opportunities, you know, business opportunities, you know, and the majority, unfortunately, the majority of educators out there are in it just to make money. And of course, anybody that's trading or anybody that's in the market is in it for a profit. So there's nothing wrong with that. But
no, everyone
there's a lot
has
of scam
to eat, right?
There's a lot of scam artists out there, to be point blank.
Absolutely.
And, you know, this is a guy, there's an incredible series of books for anyone that wants to start trading by, Jack Swagger. And he wrote a series of books called Market Wizards, Stock Market Wizards, New Market Wizards. And what he did was there's a surprising amount of traders out there that make a fortune trading.
Okay.
But you would never know who they are. They live in a nice house.
They are the wizards.
They work from home. But if you saw them, you wouldn't know. They're not on Wall Street. They're all throughout the country.
Okay.
And a lot of them don't
North Carolina.
A lot of them don't want to be known. Right. So this guy named Jack Swagger had an in with a journalist and had an in with a very successful trader. And he had a concept of he wanted to interview the best traders in the world.
Yeah.
But he started out in the United States. But he didn't want to go to like Goldman Sachs and like those type of shops. He wanted individual traders that were successful. And through a few referrals, he got in the door with some of the most talented traders out there, and he did a very good job of documenting and requiring, you know, full tax returns and brokerage statements documenting their success.
Okay.
And those books are fascinating, and what they really do is open the door to where people started to see that, hey, you can make more than the 10% that they teach you in school. They don't really teach you that in school, but that's just what people think. That you can make in the markets per year. And these guys, you know, were making.
And he wrote it in layman's terms, probably, because he was a journalist. He wrote it in a way that people who would read his stories could understand.
Yeah, he opened people's minds to there's more people than you think out there that are making 60, 70, 100 plus percent per year over a 10 plus year track record consistently year in and year out. So
those are really, really high numbers. I mean,
but your man, Warren Buffett, right?
Yeah.
Has gone on record, and I saw the interview myself, and my numbers might be off here. This was several years ago.
Yeah.
But he said, well, if I only had $50 million, I could easily make 50 to 100% return a year.
Indeed what he said.
Right.
Yeah.
And so once you're doing it for a long time, you just start seeing these opportunities, and there's so many of them out there. I mean, if you take the trading, and it's hard to do a visual, you know, over just
audio,
interview. But like, imagine like when you were in school, the big whiteboard. So if that whole huge board was the trading, and whether it's Forex or whether it's stocks or whether it's futures, or you know, whatever exchange is out there.
Yeah.
And so there's this whole huge universe of opportunities to trade. And then within all of those, you can go from the day trader that trades 200 times a day to the value investor that may make a purchase or two per year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
then within all those asset classes, there's those types of people. And so the key is – focusing, what most people do that I think is a mistake is they think they need to know a lot about the markets and trading. And I'm not saying anything bad about CNBC, although I will say I don't watch it, or watching CNBC and just getting all this information coming in. And the people that make, whether you want to call it a fortune or that are fortunate enough to make a living doing this.
Yeah.
They focus on one specific area, and they get really good at that area.
I think that's very, very fascinating point you make there, Chris. I mean, I'm always telling everyone, also on my blog, etc., to sort of block out most of the news sources because they're just overwhelming you and they won't make you that much smarter. If you watch CNBC all day long, you won't make better investment decisions. At least that's not what I truly believe in. I think if you have a set of solid principles on which you base your strategy, in your case a trading strategy, then you're set, and then you should only focus on applying those principles, and then you'll do fine in the market.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I can't emphasize that enough. It's specializing. The problem is, so someone's brand new and they're listening to the podcast and they want to learn to trade and get in, but where do they go? Right.
Sure,
how do they find out? And so I'll finish my I'll make this real short. But so I go to this guy's class.
Oh, yeah.
And he could have easily been in the Market Wizards book. He taught a very good system. So I was so lucky, but he was so good that no one's ever heard of him unless you've taken his courses. He never advertised. It was he started teaching two people, word of mouth. And by that time, he had had people flying in from all 50 states in the United States and every country throughout the world. Wow. So I was very fortunate to learn from somebody that knows what they're doing from the start.
Oh, absolutely. Mentors are so crucially important in becoming successful in anything, I think. But it's interesting that you mentioned that he had this really great system, and people are making a lot of big returns trading, etc. But they sometimes when people are explaining value investing, for example, they say, well, value investing is a good strategy because if you look at the Fortune 500 list, you know, of richest people in the world, there are several value investors in there, but there aren't, or at least it seems that there aren't many traders in there. And then they sort of say that is a proof that trading won't give you these big returns in the long run. What is your view on this?
Well, in our follow-up interview, I'll be prepared to give you specific names.
Sure.
Number one, I know that's not true.
Okay.
And cool. I'll give you one example. Probably the one of the most famous trading stories in history.
Yeah.
Is called the Turtle Traders.
Okay.
And I wasn't prepared to talk about this, but I'm not sure. There was a gentleman named Richard Dennis. I think that was his name. And he was a commodities trader, traded on the floor.
Yeah.
And he had turned nothing into $100 million, a few $100 million. He was highly successful at what he did.
Yeah.
And he had a business partner, but he did the trading, and they had a bet that Richard bet him that he could take any trader off the street and teach them his system.
Yeah.
And they would become a millionaire.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, the movie called, is it Trading Places with Eddie Murphy? A lot of people think that's based on that. They were actually came out near the same time, but it's been proven that the screenplay or the script for the movie was written before Richard Dennis ever did that. It's kind of a coincidence, but it's the same philosophy. So he interviewed and brought in, I'm going to throw out a rough number here, 15 traders. And they were everywhere from housewives to a couple people that had traded before to people that were close to homeless to, I mean, just a wide array of people, right?
Yeah.
He gave them a 2-week training class.
Mm-hmm.
2 weeks. Taught them his system. Gave them a small sum of his money. And as they followed the rules and did better, he gave them more money and more money and more money.
Okay.
And then he did it a second year, and the training course lasted a week for the new people he brought in.
Yeah.
Several of those traders run some of the largest funds in the world now. And they had 2 weeks or 1 week of education. So what it comes down to is having a system that works. Right.
And so you say, you mentioned already in the beginning that there are a lot of these self-proclaimed gurus out there who sort of try to get money out of people, say, I have the winning system here for you. How can people sort of, you know, there are all these indicators also to work with, these technical indicators, which you can plot on a chart. And so how, based on your experience, how can people make these decisions better on, like, from who to learn, who to trust, and which indicators to use?
If I've ever heard one, that's a loaded question right there.
I know,
that,
I know.
That's a two-hour discussion. But let's break it down to simplicity, okay? Let's break it down to simplicity,
sure,
all right?
Yeah.
This is why traders can make money, and this is why I've heard you say it many times that and you're quoting your mentors, and you quoted Warren Buffett by saying there's no way to predict what a stock price is going to be a month
absolutely.
Or 2 months from now. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, number one, if we have time to go into it, I have all the respect in the world for Warren Buffett, but he is one of the most intelligent, shrewdest traders out there. He keeps a perception of, oh, golly gee whiz, I live in, you know, so-and-so, and all I do is buy companies cheap, and I've turned into the biggest investment fund in the world, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, okay,
sure.
Warren Buffett knows what's going on, all right? He had read every financial book in their library, in the public library, by the age of 12. He was investing at 13. Anybody that follows the market for the number is between 5 and 10 years it takes. There's a huge learning curve. No one can learn to be a great trader in 6 months or a year.
Okay.
It takes five to 10 years. Jack Swagger documents that in his book of those traders that were the most successful traders in the world.
Yeah.
They had gone bust three times, and it was within the first 5 years, and pretty much to the T at the five-year point is when it hit and they started becoming very successful. Well, you can't tell me that Warren Buffett can read thousands of the financial reports when they came out and he remembered them. And you can't tell me that he doesn't have a very good idea of where stock prices are going.
Yeah, that he sees the patterns, et cetera.
Okay.
He
knows. And he's one of the most shrewdest options traders in the world, which most people don't know. But he doesn't talk about. But he's an incredible trader from that standpoint.
Absolutely. Yeah,
so,
you're absolutely right. He doesn't only trade in stocks. That it's sort of his main thing. But on the side, he has these huge option contracts running as well. And so it's interesting that you mentioned that, yeah.
Yeah. But to go back to the simplicity, when you're talking about the indicators, this is what people have to understand. When you're trading, you're not trading a chart. You're not trading a technical indicator. And when people get this, it's kind of like, their eyes just open, per se.
My eyes just open because I always thought that was how you did it.
Okay, so what is a market? The market is people. You're trading people.
Yeah.
And so you can say that you don't know what a stock price is going to be 2 weeks from now, and you can make a very intelligent argument of that point. But what is predictable is people. People do the same things now that they did in the 1800s.
Yeah.
That they did in the 1850s, that they did in the mid-1900s, that they did 500 years ago. People don't change. We get a little smarter and technology grows, right? But people do the same things over and over again. And the markets are run
history
by
repeats.
Fear and greed.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
I'll give you one example from a technical perspective. And I can prove in this – I can document in this example that Warren Buffett – is the wealthiest person in the world tenfold if he wanted to be. And I'm looking right now, pulled it up before the interview, Bill Gates, $76 billion, Carlos Slim, $72 billion, Warren Buffett's number four at $58.2 billion.
Yeah.
Buffett could be a trillionaire, and I'll document this. So the point that I'm trying to make is people do the same things over and over. And when you become a professional, you can just see this. I mean, it's hard to describe. It's just blatantly obvious. And there's certain things that happen over and over in the stock market. And I'll just give you one example. And please, no one just start trading this based off what I've said. I mean, I've done extensive amount of research, and I had great mentors that use this system. But there's what you call stock splits. Okay?
Yeah, sure.
A company that's growing, that shares were at $50, and now they're at $100, will a lot of times do a 2-for-1 stock split. And without going into too much detail, the reason for that would be that their competitor. So if that company was in, you know, XYZ industry, and yeah, there are three main competitors, stock prices were, let's say, between, you know, $40 and $50.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, this company's doing well, and they're at $100. Well, I have a friend that is very intelligent and makes a lot of money and makes great investments.
Yeah.
But there's people out there, they want a bunch of shares. Okay.
Yeah.
My buddy.
They feel it's more expensive. Well, it's actually the same. If you split it in half and buy two, it's the same. Yeah.
Absolutely. My buddy can buy a share of Berkshire Hathaway. Okay.
Yeah.
But he wants the $20 stock that he can get, you know, thousands of shares.
Yeah, sure.
How many shares he has, right?
It's just psychological,
okay?
Yeah.
So what happens is, you know, a company will go from $50 to $100, but all their competitors are between $40 and $50. So they'll do a 2-for-1 stock split, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So then what happens over and over again, and you can see this in Apple today. It just happened when they split.
Yeah.
That all of a sudden, some trade or some investor has 1,000 shares of this company.
Yeah.
Well, if they do a 2-for-1 stock split, well, now they have 2,000 shares.
Yeah.
Well, people care about the shares they have. So they might have 1,000 shares in another company, 1,500 shares in another company. So
yeah,
a lot of times after a stock split, they will sell a certain amount of their shares and go buy another company.
Because
they want shares, you know, they
yeah,
might have the actual intelligent reason for doing it. Right. But this
yeah,
is what happens. So a
yeah,
lot of times after the split, the stock falls in
yeah,
price, but, and I haven't researched this in the last several years, but typically after a stock split, the company's price is up 100% in roughly 2 years because
wow,
they were growing fast enough that there was a reason that they needed to do the stock split.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And now more people are buying their shares because they're cheaper. Right. Yeah.
Which creates upward price pressure.
Right.
Sure, yeah.
This is the prime example of, you're not trading a chart. You're not trading. You're trading people, and people
yeah,
are predictable,
yeah, yeah,
right?
So, stock
splits is one of the first things I learned to trade, and
wow,
that's why Warren Buffett is 10 times over the wealthiest person in the world. And let me ask you this, and you're going to have to agree with me on this, Nick, even as a value guy. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
So I'm looking at right now, Berkshire Hathaway.
Yeah.
A shares, 204,825.
Yeah.
Right? So imagine this. Warren Buffett announces tomorrow
yeah,
that he's doing a 10,000-for-1 stock split.
Yeah.
So if you have one share, then, and they do it in advance, but if the price was the same, then
yeah,
you would have 10,000 shares at $20.47.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But I guarantee you that a lot of those people that had 10,000, hundreds of thousands of shares that owned 10 shares of Berkshire Hathaway
yeah, yeah,
would sell some. But what would happen is everybody that says, oh, God, well, I wish I could invest in Berkshire Hathaway, but I can't afford it.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
If that stock was at $20,
yeah, they would
how
jump
long
in.
Would it take to go to $100?
Yeah, yeah, it would go
it
really
would go to
quickly.
It would be at $100. It would hit $500. I mean,
yeah,
you can agree, disagree with the number of whether
sure,
but it's going to – double. And so then, therefore, he's the wealthiest person in the world. It would go up tenfold, and he would be the first trillionaire if he did that, you know. And that goes to his character of he knows that, you know. Yeah. And he doesn't do that for a reason because
– Yeah, he wants long-term investors, right? He doesn't want people trading the shares in and out. He just wants people to invest this huge – pile of money into one stock and then just keep hold on to it for the rest of their lives.
But what would be interesting is you have one of the probably the best value investor of our time.
Yeah.
And if he did that, his stock would be trading at such a high PE multiple, it would be like a tech stock.
Yeah. Although tech stocks are quite cheap at the moment, in general. But
I trust you on that. You're my value source. I don't look at it from that perspective.
Well, very interesting stuff, Chris. I mean, this really opened my eyes as well, because I've always been focused on value investing because I truly believe in that system, and it's just really cool to hear that you have a totally different system, but which also makes sense. And because value investors, they also say, like, yeah, you aren't trading a chart, you are trading a company that is generating cash, and you are all and prices are determined by fear and greed, and you also say that, but you sort of like value investors try to make use of that by buying when people are acting irrationally and the prices drop lower than is reasonable. And you also use that irrationality to sort of like after a stock split, this irrational selling behavior because they now all have this huge amount of shares in their portfolio. It's very interesting. It's sort of we both try to make use of the fear and greed and the irrational decisions of others. It's very interesting.
And it's never going to change.
No, that's the best part, right?
That's the best part. You know, there's always going to be overvalued markets, my favorite, shorting. I mean, you make money three times faster. For whatever reason, stock prices fall a lot faster than they rise.
Yeah.
Just to bring it back to a simplistic point, I just can't emphasize the point enough that you're trading people. You're trading people against other people, you know, and once you start figuring out that the markets do the same thing over and over and over, and you look at it from an outside perspective looking in, it's very simple, and you can predict with a high percent of probability where stock prices are going based on certain criteria.
But you also mentioned in the beginning that you are, like you said, most money is made in the sort of longer term. So you don't believe in timing the market in the really short run, but in the sort of a little bit longer run, you can say like, oh, prices will probably move down or up in the coming months.
Let's be completely clear. I want to time it to the best of my ability, you know. Yeah. Now, sometimes that I'm fortunate and that's dead on, and sometimes it's not, right? Yeah. We keep growing and we keep getting better and better and we keep learning, you know.
Yeah, sure.
But, absolutely. I mean, we'll have to do another interview where we can go into some more specifics.
Yeah, we will, man. This is really interesting.
Because if I start talking technicals, because everything you're saying with, like, on a value basis – I can give examples of how that happens intraday, every day, and based on statistical probabilities, there's so much out there that you know we could discuss. But this interview.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then let's end with what would be your number one tip for people who are starting out. You already mentioned this these books. Any other tip for people who know nothing about trading yet and want to get started?
Well, I'll tell them what they need to know. It's not what they want to hear. And let's go ahead and I'll go ahead and plug our follow-up interview of I'll come up with a few good things when I have time to really think about it that to put people on a path, right?
Sure.
But what they have to understand, and this is so crucially important, I think it was Malcolm Gladwell, the author in his book Outliers.
Yeah,
I could be wrong there, but I think he's the first one that started talking about to become an expert in anything.
Yeah.
It takes 10,000 hours.
10,000-hour rule, yeah.
And he and now you hear that all the time. But in that book, he documented it everywhere from professional athletes to the Beatles, to people on Wall Street, to doctors, to surgeons, I mean, to attorneys, to, I mean, in every walk of life, to become an expert at what you do, it takes 10,000 hours.
It takes time.
And the biggest mistake I see people make is they're successful in their industry.
Yeah.
And they decide they want to start trading.
Yeah.
And they, in their industry, they put the 10,000 hours in.
Yeah.
And they come into trading and they get crushed because they're competing against people that have put their 10,000 hours
in.
Sure. So there's no shortcut to it. I mean, how many books have you read on value investing? How much time have you put in to where people come to you and pay you for your expertise, right?
Sure, yeah. I've been doing this for 10 years as well. So it took a lot of time to get to where I am today. And the same for you. You've been doing this for more than 10 years. And now you know what you're talking about, but it does take time, and that's why we're doing these interviews as well, to help people at least get on the right course, you know, because if like you say, there are all these people out there trying to just scam people and with these get rich quick schemes, and if you fall for some of those, it will cost you valuable time and a lot of money. So it's great if we can sort of point them in the right direction early on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the perfect topic for the follow-up interview is I've sought out and I found some of the most incredible mentors out there. That's the one thing that I could take credit for. I was lucky on the first one.
Yeah.
But I've sought out the people that were really making money, and I've seen so many different types of systems that
you can tell what works and what doesn't.
And the pros and cons, because you can make money, you know, intraday day trading for a living, right? But there's pros and cons to all of it. So that would be a great topic where I could tell some stories about some of the mentors I had and the differences in their systems for people to kind of decide like what path they want to go on and what the pros and cons of each path are.
Really interesting. Yeah, let's definitely do that. Just to wrap up, you are currently active at TradingView. Can you please explain what it is and how it can help people?
Yeah, well, I'll make it short and sweet, and we'll go into more detail the next time if you want to.
Yep,
but,
sure.
You know, I probably own, and I hate to say this because I want to be very clear. This is not an intelligent thing to do. I probably own $50,000 plus worth of trading software.
Okay.
And at one time I thought I might go into the business of creating it because the technology fascinates me.
Yeah.
And so I own a lot of different trading platforms. So I'm very familiar with what's out there and the capabilities.
Sure.
And the CEO of one of the best charting platforms I've ever had has created a company called TradingView, and it's an online HTML5 based platform where it's been designed from the ground floor to where you can use it just on any browser on your computer, but it's also touch compatible, so you can use it on your iPad, your Android device, anything. And he has such a great track record of creating award-winning platforms with groundbreaking features released years before anyone else could or any of the other top competitors could figure out how to do those features. I believe he's going to create a paradigm shift. And instead of somebody having to have a powerful computer and a multi-thousand-dollar platform that's 64-bit, that you know you can, run calculations, back testing, all this stuff quickly.
Yeah.
Within TradingView, he's created the technology to where everything is done on his high-end server side. And so if someone, I think the most you can spend on TradingView right now for real-time data is $19.99 a month.
So for
$20 with someone with a $600, $800 iPad has the same power as me on one of my $4,000 or $5,000 platforms on a $10,000 computer. And so TradingView, there's so much more to it than that, but I think it has the ability to create a true paradigm shift in the trading industry. And in a short amount of time, I think there's over 50,000 people on there day in and day out, and over 100,000 people have joined, the site. Some of those are long-term investors that, go on once a week. But every day it's already at 50,000 people throughout every country in the world. It's just growing. And it gives the new – that's important for the new person out there.
Yeah.
They can have some amazing charting features, real-time data at the most for $20 a month and not have to go buy an expensive platform. And the features that are going to be released in TradingView, it'll be a more powerful platform than any, I don't care how expensive it is, that exists on the market today.
Really cool. Really, really cool. Okay, thanks so much for sharing your insights with us, Chris. It was really refreshing to hear a completely different perspective on things, and I'm sure this will result in an interesting panel discussion. So let's see what our experts have to say. Okay, welcome back everyone to the panel discussion. We just had a great interview with Chris Moody. He shared some interesting insights with us. And now it's time to hear what our panel has to say. We are here with all four of us again. Miranda Marquit from PlantingMoneySeeds.com, Larry Ludwig from InvestorJunkie.com, and Andrew Sather from eInvestingForBeginners.com, and myself, Nick Kraakman from ValueSpreadsheet.com. So, Larry, I would like to start with you. Chris mentioned that many traders seem to be interested in trading because it's exciting. Day trading is exciting because they feel like they are actually doing something and being active. Can you understand that sentiment?
I guess from a psychology perspective, yes, definitely. I think it's interesting. The question I always have is, do a lot of people make money at it? And I think a lot of...
Yeah.
Not to say that I don't doubt individual capability, but I think most people are not good at it or not geared towards being a day trader or a short-term trader, if you will. I think there are definitely people, if they think they have the skill, go for it. I don't think everyone can do it.
Well, I actually just read George Soros' quote in which he said, "If investing is entertaining, if you are having fun, then you're probably not making any money. Good investing is boring." And so if day trading is exciting to you, you might get distracted from focusing on the really crucial points probably not make any money. If you're really good at it, sure. I mean, Chris mentioned in the interview as well that it takes a lot of time to become really good at trading. And he even mentioned that he knows some guys who consistently earn returns in excess of 50% a year. Which sounds like a very high number to me. So, Andrew, if I can ask you, do you believe that returns like these are possible?
I mean, yeah, it's definitely possible, but the question remains, what kind of drawdowns is your strategy seeing, and how does that correlate to your overall return? Because especially with a high-risk sort of strategy, you could maybe make 50% 1 year, and then the next year lose 45-50% as well, and so you wouldn't be in a great spot later on. So it all depends on what the strategy is, what the drawdowns are. I think it's definitely possible, but again, you have to look at yourself and you have to look at are you willing to not only make 50% but lose 50% in any given year? And so if that is fine with you, then go ahead and go for it. But if you want, if you can't stand to stomach losing thousands of dollars in any given year just because of what way the market turns, then you might want to look for something else.
One of the things that struck me was that, you know, we pointed out and Chris pointed out, it takes time to learn to be a good day trader. So even though we look at day trading as this sort of, oh, instant profits, the reality is to get to that point of, oh, I'm going to be able to take my profits now, it still takes time to get there. So once again, even though it's exciting and it can be a lot of fun and there's this kind of rush that goes with it, at the same time, even to get to that point where you're going to be possibly making 50% a year or losing it, of course, but even to get to that point, it takes time and it takes practice and it takes knowledge. And I just think it goes back to, you know, people think, oh, well, day trading, that might be the solution to my short-term money woes. But even getting to that point where you're going to make a short-term profit, you still have to put in the time and the effort. It's not easy and it's not magic.
Yeah, it's not instant gratification. And instant gratification is what most people are looking for. But I can imagine that day trading seems like the quickest way to earn a buck on the stock market.
It looks sexy. I mean, it sounds like it's, like you said, Miranda, it's a way out of, say, issues with lack of wealth or lack of investing. And honestly, it is a long-term strategy if you go down that path. And honestly, if you do it, I think it should only be part of your asset allocation. You shouldn't bet the farm.
Oh, yeah, and definitely. No. And with everything else, definitely you have to say, am I using money that I can afford to lose?
Exactly.
I've also looked into, you know, different trading systems, and I know there's trading systems out there that actually work really well. The hard part is finding that system that works and then staying disciplined to stay within that system. When I first started in investing, I checked out everything. I checked out value. I checked out growth. I checked out technical. And there's definitely like a big benefit to being like a day trader or a technical trader in that you're only depending on one thing, and that's price. So you don't have to worry about all the other variables, and it's something that you can measure consistently. So there's a lot of benefit to doing that. And if that speaks to you, then that's great. But again, I mean, at the end of the interview, you guys were talking about outliers. And really, when you're talking about people who can earn 50% a year, and if they're able to do that consistently, you're talking about the top, not even 1%, maybe 0.1% of the 1% who are able to make those kind of returns. And so, you know, if you're going to use that as a model for yourself, then you're depending on yourself being an outlier. And so you have to weigh that in as well and see if, you know, you think you can become one of those outliers.
It's possible, but it's not always the case. Like you said, statistically, it's pretty much guaranteed not to be.
Right. Statistically, it is. But also, studies indicate that everybody thinks they're above average intelligence. So to try and have a little realism there, too, you have to face that hard truth that you probably are not an outlier.
Chris also mentioned that the experts, the 0.01% you just mentioned, are as good as they are because they are highly specialized in one type of trade. So if I can ask you, Miranda, is it preferable to become an expert in a niche, even if that's index funds or something, or is broad knowledge preferable?
So I think really a combination is needed. I think having an overall general idea of how investing works and how money works and how returns work in general is a good general idea. But when you start getting into something you're going to specialize in and something that you want to, you know, really get good at in terms of making money, I think it's a good idea to kind of specialize in a niche. So like, for instance, you talk a lot about looking for quality businesses to invest in, and that's kind of your specialty, right, Nick? And so you probably would have more success with that style of investing than I would, since I'm huge into index funds. And I've had a lot of success with index investing because that's kind of what I focus on. And I definitely think that if you want to focus on one thing to really make you money and be the cornerstone, of your overall portfolio, then yeah, I think it's a good idea to say, well, what am I going to focus on? What resonates with me? And what do I understand really well? And then dig deeper into that and go that route.
Okay, but would you say you still need some amount of flexibility in your approach? I mean, if a certain situation arises where index funds might not be the best way to go, would you still look for other ways to invest?
Oh, definitely. I think you need to have, like I was saying earlier, you need to have a sort of general overview knowledge idea of how investing and money work in general. And then know that, yes, you're going to focus on this one niche and it might be the cornerstone of your portfolio, but it shouldn't be your entire portfolio. You should, you know, say, well, I'm going to focus on this and this will be the growth portion of it, but I need to have these other assets in my portfolio, like Larry was talking about with asset allocation. I need to have these other assets in my portfolio as well to sort of act as a backstop.
Do you got anything to add, Larry?
I guess in terms of not only that, but backstops, but you can have like stop loss orders as an example. I mean, I know it's something you do, Nick, too, as well, where if you have stop loss orders, you can definitely limit your loss. But it is asset allocation as well. I think that's the key part of it. Outside of that, I mean, ultimately, do your research. Do your, you know, if you need to, start off simple with a practice account or a demo account, you know, a paper trading account, if you will. That's one way to at least try your trades. Granted, you don't have the full psychology of investing real money, but it is better than nothing.
Yeah, like we just said, that it takes time to become really good at investing or trading. So it makes sense to practice, to start out with a virtual account so you don't actually lose money but still get to practice.
Yeah. When your real money is on the line, it does make a difference, but still, at least in terms of a paper trade account, it's better to see if your trades actually are working or not.
And that kind of goes back to the, you know, practice and putting in some of the time, even though you're day trading and looking for short-term gains. The day traders I know, whenever they want to try a new strategy or try to get into a new asset, something that they haven't traded before, they go back to that demo account. Even though they've been doing this for like 5 or 6 years and might be considered, you know, more on the expert end, they'll still go back to that demo account when they're trying something new.
And definitely what's nice about a system like that is you can go back and backtest it. And you can really do that with any system as long as your system is mostly objective and it doesn't deal with emotions, which you don't want it to be emotional anyways. And so not to say that a back test is going to confirm that your strategy will be successful, but it is a good way to get an idea of whether your strategy is on the right track or not. And obviously past performance doesn't guarantee future returns, but it's a good predictor of it.
Right.
Yeah, and I wanted to discuss this with you guys because one of the most interesting points I got from the interview personally was when Chris mentioned that traders don't actually trade charts or indicators, but they trade people. And Chris said people are predictable. Their behavior is predictable. They history repeats, so to say. So, Andrew, if I can ask you, do you believe this is true, that people's behavior is predictable and that you can use this to earn money on the stock market?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, obviously, individual people and everybody is different. You can't predict what I'm going to do tomorrow or what anybody else is going to do. But as far as people moving as a herd and as a crowd and as a group, you just look back in history, even with politics or wars, you see the same mistakes and kind of moves being used all the time. And even within like interpersonal relationships, people, they have the same, we all have the same emotions. And so people tend to do the same thing. That's why you watch movies. It's like, oh, I feel like I've seen this movie before. It's because it's following the same theme because humans go through it over and over again. I was reading a book on ancient mythology, and it's just so funny that, you know, this is even before the internet or before modern technology was around. People had the same stories that we still watch in the movie theaters today. So definitely people's behavior as a whole is predictable. And so I think that kind of brings a lot of credibility to what Chris was saying, is that if you can look past that and not get so caught up in the numbers, but remember that the market's made up of people and people act the same way, then you can not predict what it's going to do tomorrow, but you can over the long term figure out how to put your money in the right spot so that it can make some nice returns for yourself. And this is a theme I pound over and over again in my website, because you see companies all the time that they just go through these same cycles that they've gone through sometimes not even more than 10 years ago, and yet people fall for it every single time. Like, you have companies like Tesla. I just read an article like 2 days ago. It said, oh, you know, valuations do not matter for Tesla because this and this and this. And I'm sorry, what's that?
1999 all over again.
Yeah, it's 1999 all over again. People were saying that about the .com stocks. And yeah, they said, you know, oh, revenue doesn't – first they said profits don't matter. Then they said revenue doesn't matter. All that matters is how many clicks you're getting to a website. I mean, to us now in 2020 hindsight, that sounds ridiculous. But back then, you know, people, this new technology of the internet was so brand new. People thought we were in a new age. And in a sense, we were. But the market always is the market. And it's going to go through these same stages of, you know, really high irrational exuberance and then a crash after that. So I think we're seeing that again today with stocks like Tesla. And other stocks that are trading at just crazy valuations.
Yeah, much like 3D printer stocks. I mean, it's an amazing and upcoming industry, but the valuations are just through the roof.
Yeah, I mean, let me add to that. Ultimately, everything is, you know, behavioral economics is definitely a big factor. I mean, the human psychology and boom busts are always in our, you know, market. We'll always have them. There's no way around them, but just because of the way people are hardwired. I mean, honestly, we're hardwired to be poor investors. So you have to really break that model and look at the long term. And people don't look at the long term.
Yeah, that's why I always try to tell my readers to sort of try to remove emotions from the equation, because these emotions often lead to irrational decisions, and these irrational decisions cost you a lot of money. So I always urge them to sort of take a rational look at a stock and look at the facts and numbers. And this allows you to avoid many of the most common traps. Chris also made a controversial remark about how Warren Buffett could be 10 times richer than he is today if he would just do I think he recommended a 10,000-to-1 stock split for his holding Berkshire Hathaway. Larry, if I can ask you, how do you feel about this remark of that Chris made, that Buffett could be 10 times richer if he would do a stock split?
I don't know. I when I heard that, it was kind of interesting. I don't know if I have an opinion either way or other. I mean, it's hard to tell. Ultimately, I mean, Buffett's stock is very, you know, Berkshire Hathaway is very expensive. So therefore, very few people can afford to buy those shares of the stock. Ultimately, that does limit people to invest in that company. Especially at the price it's at. I don't know at the moment what it is, but it's very expensive. So therefore, most people just can't buy one share. Ultimately, made it where it's split down, where it's, say, a reasonable $50, $100 a share, you would get definitely more investors. Whether that makes him more wealthy, I don't know.
Oh, I was going to say, I think part of the value of Berkshire Hathaway is that it is sort of expensive and it's got all this cachet associated with it. If you can afford, if you can afford to buy your shares of Berkshire Hathaway, you know, that sort of I think keeps the price higher. So I don't know. I mean, maybe if it was cheaper, more people could buy more shares, but with the price certainly wouldn't be as high. You'd see a huge drop in price. So it might even just even out. It might balance out. Like Larry, I couldn't say I have a set opinion on that.
Yeah, it's obviously all speculation, but it was an interesting comment and a fun thought experiment.
At the time of this recording, Berkshire A shares are $207,000. So yeah, I mean, most people don't have that amount in their 401ks, so therefore they wouldn't be able to buy one share.
But they also have B shares, right? So they are a little bit more affordable.
Yeah, they do.
I think the point he made with if a company is growing so fast that it's going to split its shares, I think there can be a little bit of credibility with that. I don't think it's 100% guarantee indicator, but a lot of times you'll see stock splits when the stock is rising very high. So I think the difference is is the stock rising high because the business is doing well, then yes, it's a good indicator. If the stock is rising high because investors are being investors and going crazy and, you know, jumping in at high valuations, then I think it's not a good indicator of, you know, a very profitable situation. And so, I mean, with the whole Buffett thing, I don't think he would automatically become 10 times richer just because I don't think the market would react to a 10 times higher price just because the stock split. Because like Larry said, they do have the B shares as well, which trade at, it's like 138 today, so.
Yeah, Andrew, you already mentioned Malcolm Gladwell's book Outliers before in the discussion and his famous 10,000 hour rule. Chris mentioned that it takes several years to become an expert investor or a trader. So we sort of covered this, but Andrew, do you believe that it is also possible to learn how to invest or trade and in a quick way, or does it really take that long?
Yeah, this is really a great question. I think what's important is that when Malcolm Gladwell was making his 10,000 hour rule, he was talking about mastering a skill or a craft. Yeah. So he's talking about really becoming the best of the best at that thing.
Sure.
So definitely not to belittle being the best. Definitely you'd want to be the best, and the difference between the best and maybe above average is not insignificant. I mean, a couple percentage points every year will compound to hundreds of thousands of dollars, maybe millions, if you're doing your stuff right. But at the same time, the average person who's listening to this doesn't need to worry about putting in 10,000 hours because, you know, you make 10% instead of 12 or 14%, you're still in a really great spot. And so I think, yes, to become a master, you definitely need to put those 10,000 hours. And people like yourself and Chris have done that. And, you know, the results speak for themselves. But at the same time, you can still compound your money, make your money grow that money tree without being an expert. And so don't let that 10,000 hour rule scare you.
That's great advice, Andrew. Anyone else, anything to add to this?
Well, you know, if you want to make money as an investor without having to put in your 10,000 hours, be lazy like me and index.
True. I mean, if you want to earn the highest possible returns, then yeah, it takes a lot of time. But if the market average is fine for you, then index funds are a great way to start.
I was going to say that's one option. I mean, indexing is definitely the easy way out, and I don't disagree with it. But ultimately, if you do think someone is an expert in that field, you can invest in that mutual fund, for example.
Right.
Or if you have enough money, do a hedge fund as well. I mean, there's definitely options that you have that you don't have to become the expert yourself. You can hire that expert if you think they're justified for their experience and skill.
Right. And one of the most interesting things that I did when I was doing an interview with somebody for your site once, Larry, was when I did an interview for somebody at Investor Junkie, was they did talk about how in a lot of cases the wealthiest don't manage their own money. Mm-hmm. They focus on making money, or, you know, making the best of their money, but they hire experts to take care of their money so that they can focus on other things.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the key rule of leadership, right? To hire people who are smarter than you are.
I mean, ultimately it makes sense. I mean, the classic phrase, was it 10 years in overnight successes are 10 years in the making, and definitely applies to investing for the long haul. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint.
That's true.
Nice one, Larry. Let's end with that very philosophical statement. And thanks again for listening in. And we hope to have you back here again with us next week.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at moneytreepodcast.com for more free investing resources.